Martins. This is Severin, your hostess of the day, the hostess of the show called Greenhorn Radio. Greenhorn Radio is radio for young farmers, by young farmers, and on behalf of the young farmers, I'd like to be welcoming our guest today, Trevor Kockenbuck. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Hello, thank you for joining us. Now, this show is always recorded for the benefit of young farmers, and as someone who is involved in the food system in a non-farming capacity, I thought it might be good for you to explain a little bit of what you're doing and where you are.
Okay. All right, well, my name is Trevor Kockenbuck, and I started a company 2.5 years ago called Fresh Fork Market. I was a student in college at Case Western Reserve University, and I was dining out at a local restaurant with some fellow classmates. The restaurant was advertising local. We asked our waitress what was local that night in the middle of August, and she came back with a response that there was nothing local, that they had a hard time finding farmers, the price point, distribution, communicating with farmers, et cetera. So we put together a business plan, kind of pitched it to a few people, and essentially we had customers ready to buy, so we decided to build out the business model, and we've done so. So essentially what Fresh Fork is today is an eBay for local foods in the Cleveland, Ohio area, and we've got a web-based interface where farmers enter their own inventory, put prices, photos, descriptions, et cetera. The restaurants can go online, purchase that product, and then we serve as an outsourced logistics firm in the middle, and we move it from point A to point B with no inventory.
Holy moly. And so now you've been doing this for how long, and what's your what was your volume starting out, and what is your volume now?
Okay. So the concept was in August of 2007 when we had the first idea of the concept. And, we put our business plan together through the end of 2007 and really started building the technology, et cetera, in the beginning of 2008. Our first sales were in June of 2008, and that was June 23rd, actually. And by the end of October, we had sold 57 restaurants from 36 area farmers in year one there. Last year would have been year two. And last year what we did is we expanded that customer base from just restaurants to selling also to residential consumers. And I'll explain a little bit why we made that maneuver last year. But we essentially created a CSA-like model, a subscription model. It was a multi-farm CSA that included meats, dairies, all your proteins, your cheeses, your fluid dairy, produce, et cetera, and gave people a meal plan. And we had 120 subscribers to that last year, and we're looking at about 400 subscribers to that this year.
So this has been an incredible boom-like growth of the local food market for the farmers in your network. And maybe you could describe to us who those farmers are and how close in they are and how the thing happens kind of at the end of the truck.
Okay. Yeah, so I get asked a lot of times about what my definition of local is, and I guess that's kind of what, paraphrasing what you said, you're asking. I don't base local strictly on mileage. Now, in my network, I don't have a farmer outside of the 75-mile radius. I pick up from farmers within a 75-mile radius. The reason I chose that is not because I feel that that's what defines a product as local, but for my logistics model and for my cost model, it's the only number that makes sense. If I doubled it, I would have some problems meeting the price points the customers need and things like that. So I work with farmers within a 75-mile radius of Cleveland. They're all small to medium-sized family farms. The produce side of it, I think the smallest farm I work with is an urban garden. It might be, I don't even know how to describe it, 1/32nd of an acre or something like that. And then the larger farms I work with, I think the biggest is doing 30 acres of produce.
So these are really, from a USDA perspective, small farms that you're working with, the interface with you. How does that work? On Monday, they send in a list. How does that happen?
No. So when we when we started coming up with the business idea, what we found out is that finding the farmers wasn't the hard part. I mean, there's plenty of websites that say who the farmers are, et cetera. And I'm going to put a little twist on it. But the problem with one of those things is you always find the same farmers. So the same farmers that go to the farmers markets find the websites to put their product up on or their contact info, et cetera, and it becomes this small group of rather specialty producers. When in reality, there's hundreds of more farmers out there in the community. So what I've been able to do is go out and find those producers through town hall meetings, through driving door to door, and really just word of mouth. Once you start selling product for one person, they hear it from the other, their neighbor. They're going to call you up and they want to start selling too. So what the farmers do is once they contact me, and I talk to them about what they produce, I go out and visit their farm. I make sure that they're following sustainable production methods. And I do that not so much out of a philosophical belief to do that, but I do it because my customers expect, and they've kind of got this informal trust that Fresh Fork is delivering them organic or possible. So to uphold that brand image, I need to make sure that the products that the producers list on my marketplace are, close to that image. So I go out, I talk with the farmers, learn about what they're producing. Then once they're accepted into the Fresh Fork network, they actually go online each week and they list their products. So they create a product listing, put photos, descriptions, et cetera, and say, what the price is and what quantity they have available. The customer is then able to make the purchase decision of which farm they want to purchase from, at what price point, and how much they want of it.
And they're doing that all on a digital interface from the back of their kitchen?
Well, wherever their computer is, but yeah. So I have some guys that do it from the BlackBerry in the field.
Whoa. Wow. And have you, in the process of doing this, discovered that you're part of a whole kind of newfangled web-based distribution tribe? I know some people down in Georgia, at the Athens Electronic Farmers Market, but I don't know that many other kind of distribution tribes, but maybe you do.
I would say the words you use there, distribution technology, that's where I'm trying to go with it. I think that I'm taking an approach that's specifically focused on distribution, and I've built. So my website is not so much for marketing; it's for convenience. It offers my customer the convenience of purchasing without somebody bugging them. It reduces my sales cost, and then also at the same time, it reduces my my transaction cost of having to communicate with producers, et cetera. So I use the web tool as a distribution tool. A lot of the other websites that I've seen coming out are focused purely on the marketing side of things. Farmers can list their products all day long on a website, but until somebody's figured out how to get from point A to point B, it doesn't really matter.
So once again, thank you for joining us on Green Horns Radio. My guest today is Trevor Hacking, and he's coming to us from the Cleveland area, where he is the mastermind and Wizard of Oz behind the scenes on the web, creating a structure of relationships that benefit eaters at restaurants, farmers in the fields, and all while maintaining a 75-mile radius trucking route and logistical empire with the purpose of bringing that gorgeous food into the city and saving everybody involved the headache of managing what we all know to be the quite overwhelming logistics of rebuilding our food system.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about where this is going to go next. So you've developed this program and this website and this set of relationships and probably a good amount of understanding about the trials and tribulations of this particular part of our food system. Where do you want to see your work go, and what do you see to these other towns and cities in similar ways?
So I guess where I would like to go with this is that what I'm doing here in Cleveland is really trivial compared to the size of the food market. I mean, there's the ag side alone, $600 billion, and I'm, you know, this tiny little speck in Cleveland right now. I think where I could have the most difference is to help help farmers, small, medium farmers, create a network that they could sell to the existing sales channels. And, you know, everyone in the local foods arena immediately assumes that selling to wholesale or grocers or distribution just sounds evil, that you're not going to get a good price point, et cetera. In reality, though, I think it's the way in which local foods is going to move out of being a niche market and something that's really quite limited in access and often limited to only those of the most elite ranks of our society. And the only way to penetrate the rest of those people and to really have fair access to the food is to get it into the hands of the distributors and grocers who have the sales channels, who have the infrastructure to handle the food safely, effectively, efficiently, and help them do it by solving their pain point of, you know, how do I find farmers, how do I communicate with them, and how do I make things easier. So, you know, the big thing that there's essentially a communication gap between small farmers and these existing channels. You know, how do they package their goods? How do they grade them? What does that customer expect in terms of consistency of the product, a large availability of that product, selection, things like that that the farmers often don't know, and it's scary to figure out, and the big distributors don't want to take the time to figure out how to teach people to do it. And I think that my role can be into the future is, you know, helping bridge that gap on education and training and providing the infrastructure, the IT infrastructure, to help farmers work with these existing distributors and grocers.
And so for you, that means consulting, or that means setting up a franchise from your existing web platform?
I would say closer to the franchise, but not so. I don't like the word franchise. I guess license it, or essentially what I'm working on right now is to continue to build Freshfork as a web-based application that can service farmers irregardless of where they're located. And that my role initially is to jumpstart those transactions and to jumpstart. So I'm a catalyst for that. The way that application is structured is that I'm building the core and giving away everything around it, that I want it to be an open-source platform where, you know, if you wanted to design a Facebook integration, you could build it and plug it into my application. And that way it could be something flexible for, you know, the different needs of the direct market people, the wholesale, the shipper packers, et cetera, and do something like that. At the same time, though, put everyone on the same playing field. It's kind of like a stock exchange for food.
Okay, this is really fabulous. I like the stock exchange, but even more than that, I like the Main Street marketplace, the grocers, the independent grocers, the mom-and-pop, and the middle-scale commerce that I see to be a really critical step forward as we think about our food system and formalizing some of the relationships that will, of course, allow for economic recovery of the farm sector, but recognizing that farm sector recovery is deeply linked to that commercial Main Street and to these small and medium scale businesses that we rely on to be conduits of our product. Can you talk a little bit about the struggles of that medium scale commerce sector, those Main Street vendors and grocers? What are they facing, and how can we as farmers, in our interactions with the farmers market, how can we help our consumers understand their position?
Okay. I'll address the first half of that first, and then if I get off topic, you know, rope me back in and get me back on to part two of the question. So regarding the existing medium-tier grocers and retailers, you know, I guess your question is, what's their challenge with local foods? And I guess I would start at identifying what their customers really want. Processed or convenience foods are a growing sector, have been for a long time. Prepared foods are, I mean, if a grocery store doesn't have prepared foods, it can't compete anymore, hardly. And the medium-tier grocers, that's the real differentiation point from a Walmart, from a you know traditional Tops or whoever the grocery store is that doesn't have that prepared food section in it. And so they have a chef on staff, and they can make meals that are affordable, quick, easy for the working family. So they're looking at value-added foods, so processed, convenience-type food. They're looking for prepared foods. And then I'd say the other trend is kind of that culinary experience thing. And so local, I think, fits into that culinary experience, that there are some people looking for specialty goods and higher-quality goods, and it's an attraction point. You know, people love walking into a grocery store and seeing beautiful displays of produce. I think for local foods to fit into these existing mid-tier grocers, we need to play to the angle of these are higher quality, fresher products. They're going to have that wow factor to your customers, and then fill that gap for what their challenges are. You know, how do I get this product efficiently? So I need somebody to deliver it to me. I don't want 10 trucks. I want one truck bringing food from 10 farmers. How do I communicate with those farmers? I don't want to call 10 farmers. I want to do it in one stop. Essentially recreating that role of a distributor, but in a virtual format. And then, again, the food safety aspect, the packaging, things like that, you know, they want all the tomatoes to come in a 25-pound flat. They want to be GAP certified, chilled, et cetera. All the things that the existing food industry has put in place that, you know, really the grocers need to uphold that cold chain. They need to uphold the integrity of the food, the chain of custody, everything along the way, so that it's really a liability for them. And if they don't have that in place, they're violating their own HACCP plan, their own food safety plan, et cetera, and it's going to cost them. So I think for local foods to get to that Main Street America, we need to replicate or, not recreate the systems, but participate in a way that's comfortable and familiar to that retailer.
And how then is it that you're able to compete? You know, what we hear so much as farmers is that we want to cut out the middleman because you can get a retail price for your product. You know,
whoever at the research institute started promoting that 30 years ago should be ashamed, honestly, in my opinion. In my opinion, not worth a whole lot, I guess. But the whole farmer's market thing, there was a study that came out from California 2 years back that the cost to go to a farmer's market, they compared three-size farms in California, a 20-acre farm, and these are what they considered small farms, a 20-acre produce farm, a 60, and a 200-acre. And then they compared their cost to market their product through a CSA, through farmer's markets, and through wholesale. And the cost to take that product to a farmer's market for the smallest farm, so the price, the percent of their revenue that went to marketing that product at farmer's market increased as the size of the farm got smaller. So they had, I think it was 80% of the revenue. So if that farmer brought in $2,000 a day, $1,600 was going towards transportation, labor, packing that product specifically for that retail-type customer, spoilage at the end of the day, booth fees, things like that. And so I guess I'm kind of getting off the topic here. But
that's good. I like it when you're ranting. Ranting is helpful.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that there is a place for specialization in the marketplace, and somebody can – you can't be the best grower and the best marketer and the best distributor all in one and be profitable. And so I think there is some value to letting somebody have that role of specializing in the sale or specializing in the customer interface, et cetera, and doing that.
Well, I think also is that the relationship that you have with your end clients and the chain of command and the chain of coldness and the chain of liability, if all of those participants in that chain are coming from a spirit and and from a position of progress and who are interested in becoming more sustainable, in reducing the distance, in keeping the food fresh, in maintaining high quality standards, I think I think that a lot of that distrust of the middleman comes from the fact that the middleman hasn't been terribly caring or intentional or progressive. And I think that as we discover that this means jobs and this means economic development and this means the capacity to expand your market, that farmers and new generations of farmers are increasingly coming to the understanding that, you know, hustling your produce all day outside can undermine your sanity, and that the alternative, which is working with people like you, can give you the capacity to, you know, sell far more volume of food. And if we and if we kind of collectively as farmers are trusting people like you as distributors to have the same set of intentions and the same set of values and care over that food and of the system that, that moves that food, that in fact that means more jobs, more volume of food, more profitability, and more people eating the food that we're growing. So I'm really respect the work that you're doing, and I think that the dignity of formalizing our what has been alternative food distribution network and formalizing it in ways that are similar to but not identical to the conventional distribution model, you know, has tremendous power as a wedge in the rediscovery of and reconstruction of healthy localized localized food systems and local economic drivers. What I'm interested to know is, how do you gauge within your business, how do you gauge the impact that this increased sales volume is having for your farmers? And has there been any studies that you know about that demonstrate the incredible potent force that this kind of increased traction for local foods has just for local business and the local economic development?
Boy, that's I personally, from my experience here in Cleveland, can't accurately answer that question. You know, I have data about sales volume, from my producers, but one of the things that, so even if I have the sales volume of what a producer did through me and the price points, etc., the data points that I'm missing that are required to fill in the rest of that equation are, you know, who else did they sell to? At what price point? What percentage of their product were they able to move? What percentage of their product did they have to plow under the field? How did their inputs change in terms of marketing costs, et cetera? How about their outputs? And just there's a whole series of different things that, I mean, there's so much data that's outside of my realm of understanding right now that it would take a serious research endeavor to try to figure out what that impact has been to get a holistic approach at this.
So does that sound like a job for the USDA?
I'm not sure. I will never answer a question saying that I think government should do something for to solve the problem. Even on the research side, there, that's something that perhaps for me to do in the near future. If I want to market the website of my business, I need to find out, you know, quantitatively what that impact has been. On the economic development side of things, I think that's a local question. The local economic development entities, nonprofits focused on that, et cetera, could potentially take a role on figuring out what has been the impact of an alternative or similar distribution network on things like, you know, just the raw economic change. So, you know, on a cluster level, has it created more tractor sales? Has it created more sales of maintenance services? Is the price of food up? Are they moving a higher percentage of their product, et cetera? And then on a second side of it, are we making a market opportunity for new producers, young producers, and making that market viability component? I think if we can make that the strongest argument, that's we can have a long-term lasting effect on agriculture.
I would totally agree with you on that point. There's many towns where you talk to folks and they say, yep, you know, Eugene, Oregon, Arcata, California, those are two towns I know kind of have just been up in the Northwest where, you know, the farmer's market is saturated and you just can't sell much more direct in those places. So,
well, and you're limited at a farmer's market to the number of people you can see in front of you and the number of people you can tell your story to. So you can't broadcast your message. And at least here in Cleveland, the farmers markets are to the point that they're starting to cannibalize each other, that, you know, there's a new farmers market, it seems like, popping up on every corner once a year, and they all want to use the same farmers, and they're really drawn from the same customer base.
Yeah, and it's exhausting.
I think that obviously
there's always going to be room for farmers markets, and you know, we'd love to see more farmers markets that don't require the farmers to get up at 3 a.m. and drive 4 hours and set up a tent and work a 17-hour day.
I think the customer demographic will be changing some too, because who do you see at farmers markets? Not people my age or your age, or not overwhelmingly.
Mm-hmm. And so, what are some of the other venues that you think might pop up other than restaurants and grocers? Do you see any other kind of emergent commercial spots where this food is going to move, and especially within, you know, in our age group and like work at the workplace?
I think that there's going to be an increase in concierge-type services that at least, and you know, my crystal ball has never been completely accurate, so I will put that disclaimer in there. But I think that you're going to see a trend towards people wanting to move, the customer base that we're talking about, college-educated, young professionals, wanting to live in the cities in the trendy areas, wanting to have an active lifestyle. And that active lifestyle doesn't mean, satisfying my basic needs of, shopping for groceries and, going and doing laundry and this, and that. And then I think there's an opportunity in the market for, different types of concierge services that would bring that type of service to their apartment complex, things like that. And so in terms of different markets, I think that direct-to-your-door market where you really don't have that face-to-face connection might be one of the future opportunities.
We're back to the milkman.
Yes.
And in fact, we're learning, the mail's always been delivered by hand straight to you at the door, but we're starting to learn that, through the magic of computers and logistics, and, we know from UPS when they made this amazing computer program that helped them to make more turns on red, how much carbon they save by taking routes that allow them to turn right on red, and how much more efficient it is in some instances to move things in a coordinated way to individual users, end users, than it is for all those end users to go milling around looking for parking in Park Slope, which is a major problem. If you're ever in Park Slope, you'll notice it's a major problem. And I agree with you so much, and I want to make sure that you know about the model in New York City called Sweet Deliverance, which is basically like a CSA lunchbox where you get delivery of beautiful food. And it seems like your crystal ball is pretty accurate to the way that I can see the world. Trevor, we're getting to the end of our time. I just wanted to give you a second to tell us how to learn more about your project, and what you've been reading lately that's been inspiring and informing your insight about where this world and this work is going, and how people who might feel themselves to be involved in a commercial way and as their life's work in figuring out this really critical in-between component in our food system, where they might start to learn what they need to know to get started down that path.
Okay. I guess the first part, how to get in contact with me or learn more, is just simple. Go to my website, freshforkmarket.com. The middle word there is fork, like the kitchen utensil, knife, fork, and spoon, as opposed to the livestock animal. So freshforkmarket.com. And then the second part there, what have I been reading that's been inspiring, et cetera? I'm not saying I don't read, but I'm a skeptic of everything I read. And I'd say that the best knowledge that I have gained about this industry is by getting out and actually talking to people. So, and talking to people who disagree with you. And I would say that's the number one way. The second way is, at least in the business sense, you could ask people all day long if they want to buy something, but the only test of that is if you try to sell them. So I'd say I learned the most about my industry through talking to different people, going to different conferences, getting out there and doing things like this, getting on the phone with interesting people. And then the second thing is just trying to sell some sort of service or product, et cetera, to that person and you know, learning from them what their need is.
Well, so that here, that you heard it from the top, folks. Get out there and do something, and you'll learn a lot. Now, I want to thank you so much, Trevor, for being such an interesting person on the phone, and to encourage everyone to think more about the ways in which we are collectively re-envisioning the systems and processes that will bring the fresh food that we want to the lunch boxes of the kids that are even some of them not born yet, and really proactive. As we establish institutions around that intention. Thank you, Trevor. Thank you all. This has been Greenhorns Radio, radio for young farmers, by young farmers. I want to make sure that everyone knows this weekend, Greenhorns Mixer. We've got a really great one coming up in the Seed Bank. It's the Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Bank in Petaluma, California. It's an old bank converted into a seed bank. We've got 600 oysters, fabulous live music. We're screening a film called Northern Lights about the socialist farmers movement in 1912 in North Dakota. It's a fabulous documentary film trilogy. Fabulous cheese, Trumer Pills, which is a Berkeley brewed beer. Young farmers, beginning farmers, aspiring farmers, urban, rural, interns, apprentices. They're all going to be there, and we'll all be sharing what we know about and care about together and confabbing within our producer community about the scene as it evolves and our role in it. We had a really nice time last week at the Small Farmers Journal, and we're going to have a really nice time on May 1st in Connecticut. So things are going well. I hope that you're nearby one of those events. You'll join in, and if you want to do your own event one of these days, just let us know. Thank you, Hearst Ranch. Thank you, Heritage Radio. Thank you all. Bye-bye.